Hello, Internet, and welcome to Steam Cleaners, presented by the Rough Drafts Podcast Network. Each week, my lovely co-host and I talk about some video games that we haven't talked about on this podcast before. And we look at our, dissect them in and share our thoughts, feelings, give a rating, all that fun stuff. And of course, I am joined today, as always, by the lovely co-host Walter Ciades Fetchuk. Walter, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing quite well. As we were recording, I mentioned on the Dune Part 2 episode, I've been back from LA for a couple of days. And I wish vacations never ended. I wish I could be on vacation for the rest of my life. It's funny, I mentioned that to my partner or I can't remember who I mentioned it to someone, and someone was like, well, yeah, you could always take a vacation. It's, you know, the great one. And I was like, I'm pretty sure you mean sleep, and that means death. That's not a vacation. So
I don't,
such is life.
Wouldn't call that vacation for sure. It may be relaxing for a little bit and then nothing but relaxing, I suppose. But yeah,
that is a vacation though. It's entirely relaxing.
There's no good joke I can make here that won't sound particularly bleak. So I'm going to go to a space in my life that I thought would be bleak, but has actually been a pretty fun time, which is NFL free agency. Now, Walter, you were in LA recently. We talked a little bit about what we expected going in, but things didn't really hit full swing until after we parted ways. So I guess let's start with your lovely Bills here. How are you feeling about things? Because I know there are some people who have some tough feelings about some of the people you've had to let go so far this offseason.
I think the easiest way to sum it up is we have Josh fucking Allen, who is arguably the second best quarterback in the NFL. And when you have Josh Allen as your quarterback, you're always in it, right? You always have a chance to win a Super Bowl. Quarterback is the hardest position to figure out in the NFL, and when you have a franchise guy, everything else around them, you can find pieces that are going to work. That being said, like, we let go of a lot of players, right? A lot of players have left. Mitch Morse, the starting center, I think was like the first one I saw that was announced to leave. We cut, you know, Jordan Poyer is a free agent and is gone. Gabe Davis obviously was like the big one. Everybody's like, oh, he's the second receiver. And it's like, well, listen, guys, half the year we were saying like he's amazing and we should pay him. And the other half of the year we were, you know, telling him to go fuck himself and that he should be, you know, putting bags on the planes at the Buffalo airport. So it's weird because a lot of fans are sort of kind of like remorseful and like, oh my God, this is the end of an era. And at the end of the day, like, listen, we haven't won a Super Bowl. Like, maybe we were too old. Like, maybe these aren't the right guys. Like, we as Bills fans sort of have this attachment to players in a way that might be a little unhealthy, which is hilarious me saying that after I, you know, spoke so glowingly of Josh Allen. But, like, we have immortalized these guys from the drought years, right? You ask any Bills fan, hey, talk to me about Fred Jackson. And we go, what do you mean, the Incredible Hulk? talk to me about Kyle Williams, right? Like, oh, my God, that dude is, like, the best of us, right? Like, the best of Buffalo was fucking Kyle Williams. The dude stayed here for fucking ever. Lee Evans, right? Like, the receiver who, if he had a competent quarterback at all in his career, would be, you know, arguably one of the best receivers in the NFL, like, so on and so forth. So, like, yeah, is it a bummer? Sure. But I'm not one of those people that are going to be like, oh, well, you know, Jordan Poyer, sure, he went to Miami, but, like, he was really good for us. No, fuck Jordan Poyer. Fuck him. Go fuck yourself. You went to Miami of all places. I don't care that you're from there. Miami is like the one team that Buffalo is predispositioned to fucking hate. Like, we dislike the Jets, right? Because I think both of us just sucked for so long. But, like, nobody takes the Jets seriously. The Jets don't even take themselves seriously. It's why they have a vice presidential candidate as their starting quarterback. And it doesn't matter how many linemen they sign. He's still an anti-vax Sandy Hook conspiracy theorist.
It does seem like a problem, yeah.
I don't fucking care. And, like, the Patriots, what are you going to do? You went against the greatest quarterback of all time for 15 years and arguably one of the greatest coaches for that long. I can hate the guys on Sundays, but at the end of the day, we were watching fucking greatness. I don't know if anybody else is going to do that. Maybe Mahomes, right? And like, I hate Mahomes in a way that I'd never hated Tom Brady. But to circle back, we didn't have a lot of money, and we kind of focused on some of the things we really needed to focus on, right? Obviously, Allen and fucking Von Miller restructured their contracts to open up some free agency, or to open up some money for us. You know, we were about $40 million over the cap, and they got us to a point where we were under the cap and could actually sign some people. We kept some really good players for us, younger players that I was really scared we were going to lose. We kept AJ Epinesa. We kept Daquan Jones, who, with today's retirement of Aaron Donald, Daquan Jones was like second or third defensive tackle by all advanced metrics. If you look at PFF in the NFL, he was a guy that ate double teams, that really made, you know, teams work to try and stop him from getting pressure onto the quarterback. And that opened up guys like Ed Oliver, like Von Miller, like Gregory Rousseau, like Epinesa to actually get to the quarterback. And then a couple of new guys, we brought in Mac Hollins from Atlanta, and we brought in Nicholas Morrow from Seattle.
Yeah, man. Enjoy those 180 yards and 18 catches from Mac Hollins. I'm sure he'll treat you well.
Listen, I take flyers, right? We signed Curtis Samuel. That seemed to be like kind of the big crowning thing that we've done here, outside of, I think, Daquan Jones. I think Daquan Jones was like a really, really fucking big deal for us. But Curtis Samuel was a receiver that, like, I personally thought kind of going into free agency, like, listen, he's not T. Higgins, right? He's not the flashiest guy. But, you know, if he can do the same production that Gabe Davis got, well, Curtis Samuel is $8 million a year and Gabe Davis is $15 million a year. Yeah, $15 million a year. So I guess I'll fucking take it. I'll take it a bit cheaper. And hey, Jaguars, I hope you fucking have fun with Gabe Davis not showing up half the year. But Chase, you know, my team didn't do a lot. Whereas your team paid a 35-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury like $150 million. How do you feel?
First of all, it was $180 million. Thank you very much.
Oh, my apologies. My apologies. I shortchanged him.
But look, here's the thing. I think I said this to you before on this podcast, but at some point I was going to talk myself into whatever the Falcons were going to do, right? I'm a fan. I'm here to watch every Sunday. We're trying new things. And as much as I was disappointed by our coaching hire choice, despite what the media seems to think about it, I just wanted something that I could talk myself into, right? I could have talked myself into Fields. I was ready to talk myself into Fields back in January. And then people have just thrown out stat after stat after stat about how bad Fields has been. And so I kind of finally came to a point where it's like, well, Fields at least has some upside as a young guy. But, you know, if we go with Kirk Cousins, then we have some stability at a position where we need some stability, and I can talk myself into that. And that's what we did. You know, it's a contract that's less egregious than I think a lot of people think it is, because we front-loaded it, which is something a lot of teams don't do, right? We took $90 million of the $100 million guaranteed in these first 2 years, which are the 2 years that are going to be like a, you know, shut up and prove it kind of thing, right? If we decide 2 years from now that he's 37 years old, the Achilles hasn't healed the way that we want it to, and he's just not the same guy, we move on 2 years from now. It's not like we had the assets to draft the guy we wanted in this draft anyway, right? At number eight, there weren't any options to really move up because the people above us all really want a rookie quarterback in a draft class that has a lot of quarterbacks that people seem very excited about. So I had I think it's a good deal given that we have the freedom to front load it, and we'll have that flexibility in the back half if we end up needing to move on. You know, I have to ignore the vaccination stuff. Just we're going to pretend that he never said anything problematic about that side of things, because otherwise I'm going to feel sad. But everything else he's done has been great. He announced that he signed with us through like a Star Wars style scroll that was really fun. We found out about the news because he told the guy who helped like shovel his driveway on a regular basis, who tweeted about it before free agency went live, which means we're now under investigation by the NFL for tampering. Like, that's a thing that needs to be done. Like, sure, let's ignore the fact that it took us several hours to announce that deal compared to teams that somehow had multifaceted, numerous stage contracts 2 minutes after free agency started with players they wouldn't have legally been allowed to talk to. No questions there, of course, but, you know, Kirk Cousins dares to talk to his neighbor, and that's a problem that's going to probably cost us like a sixth round pick or something. Because the NFL makes sense. It's a league that makes sense. But look, he seems to be very fun. It was great hearing, like, he went to Kyle Pitts and was like, "Hey man, what do I need to do to get that that jersey number from you? Like, I'll buy you dinner, I'll give you whatever. Like, what's the price?" And Kyle Pitts is like, "Just throw me the ball, man. I just want to be targeted every day, every game." It's like, man, that's bleak, but good. I'm glad they're on the same page, you know? Like, I'm glad that they're getting along. I don't know. We've got a lot of young talents, and we signed a couple wide receivers that I'm hyped for. You know, Darnell Mooney got finalized on the day we're recording this, so it was kind of announced a couple days ago. He's the Bears' number two. He can be a number two for us behind Drake London, and I think it'll go really, really well. I think that should go well. He's a nice deep threat for us. And while I think it's a little bit silly that we traded away Desmond Ridder, because while I don't like the guy as a starter, I think he's a perfectly reasonable backup, and the Cardinals will be very happy to have a backup quarterback that can be on the contract that he's on for another couple years. It's a very reasonably priced contract. We have Rondale Moore now, so I don't know. Apparently he's all right. A number three option should be fine. We've got Ray McLeod, who I think we got, I think was a Bill at one point and has been a journeyman since. A Kadarell Hodge. Like, we're signing a lot of wide receivers, which I hope from the bottom of my heart means that we're going to be drafting defense. For the love of God, we have Drake London, we have Kyle Pitts, we have Bijan Robinson, we have Darnell Moon, we have the number four ranked offensive line in the league. Get us an edge rusher, please. Give me one guy that knows how to get after the quarterback. That's all I ask, man.
It's not that hard for you guys because your division is shit.
I mean, are you not afraid of Baker Mayfield coming through? Because,
whoa, okay, no. So listen. I will not allow you to slander Baker to try and get me to prove my point. But like, your division is pretty bad, right? Like, Derek Carr is like, this is Derek Carr's year. We've been saying that for like 8 years now. Like, Baker Mayfield, I love fucking Baker Mayfield. I wish if we hadn't had Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield would have been our quarterback instead. The dude does not get the respect he deserves because, one, he was drafted by the Browns, and two, he was compared so much to Johnny Manziel, which isn't fucking fair. And three, you guys have the Carolina Panthers in your division, which means all of your, like, all three teams are guaranteed at least two wins. So, you know, it's a shit division. What can I say?
It's not great. And I'm very happy to take advantage of that because the Saints have condemned themselves to cap hell year after year after year. And I love seeing them suffer. So that's fun. And I love seeing the Panthers desperately try to dig themselves out of the hole they dug themselves into. So that's also a positive as far as I'm concerned. And I'm hoping that all of this means we can get a nice divisional title. It would be nice to not have a losing record, which we've had for, I want to say, 5 years in a row now at this point. It certainly feels like it's been a long time since we approached even mediocrity. So I'll take it, man. I'm not picky at this moment in time. I just hope that our front office has a plan for when we need to move on. I don't know if that means we take a quarterback in like the second or the third round whose job is just to learn from Kirk Cousins and we try like the Desmond Ridder strategy, but maybe someone better than Marcus Mariota teaching him. I don't know. We know that we're going to be back to needing a quarterback in a couple of years when you sign a 35-year-old with a pretty bad injury that he's had historically. And I hope we have an answer to that. But you know what, Walter? This is not a Solve the Falcons Many Problems podcast. It's not even an NFL podcast. It is a gaming podcast. And I am very excited for whatever you've been playing because you have not told me. I can't do like a fake out reveal here because I don't know what it is you're going to throw my way. And the only thing I do know is that you seem to think it will garner a strong reaction out of me. So hit me, buddy. What have you been playing?
Yeah, so NFL Head Coach was released on June 20th, 2006, and had Bill Cowher on the cover.
It sure did. Please tell me this isn't a fake out.
No, that this is a fake
God
out.
That
damn
was
just
it.
A fun fact.
How dare you? Fact. I loved NFL Head Coach. Did you know in the original NFL Head Coach, I took Vince Young to a Super Bowl title in his rookie year by taking with the number one draft pick? God, I love that guy.
Chase, I once won a Super Bowl in a Madden game with Pat White as my starting quarterback.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but
I know about taking bad quarterbacks and winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, but you had control over that. I just called plays and I got Vince Young to a title. Criminally underrated is all I'm saying. Anyway. Who fucking, how dare you? How absolutely dare you? Okay. Tell me what game you played.
Wow, I didn't realize you had such strong feelings about NFL Head Coach. My bad. I wouldn't have done the fake out if I knew you were going to be so excited about it. Chase, as you and the listeners at home know, as we were recording, last weekend, basically, I flew to LA to hang out with you, to do some fun things, and then I flew back. All of these flights were on Boeing aircraft, by the way, and I survived. Now I can watch the Last Week Tonight with... what's his face on HBO?
John Oliver?
To watch the Boeing. John Oliver, thank you, to watch the Boeing thing and not be terrified. Oh, that being said, though, because I was on a flight, because I needed to play a game for the podcast, it meant bringing out my Switch, bringing out something on the airplane that I could play, you know, a few hours on each flight, you know, get a couple hours into a game, you know, about 6 to 8 hours, get a feel for it, and then be able to talk about it with you today. Well, and that left me with, what am I going to play? Right, what should I play on there? Mm-hmm. I really didn't want something like a Legend of Zelda, just because it doesn't feel right playing it on a handheld for some reason for me. It just doesn't feel great. It gets me a little motion sick. So I started thinking about what would be games that would fucking blow Chase's mind if I actually played them and if I held it from him. And I said, Chase, the game we're going to discuss today is Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay. I was wondering how you were going to top NFL Head Coach, but congrats on finding the path, my friend. Which of the Ace Attorney games did you play?
So I did get the trilogy, but I will be honest. I only played about 6 hours, which is the first game, right? Mm-hmm. And even that, I'm only like halfway through it. I've only played about 3 episodes.
That does
sound
about right.
Listen, I'm shocked. That 6 hours, that was only as far as I got into those games. For some reason, I thought they were a little bit shorter, which I want to start something with a little bit of a grain of salt here. I only played 6 hours, right? Mm-hmm. And this is my one criticism I have of the Switch, which I think I talked about with Mario and Rabbids way back when I reviewed that. I don't use my Switch when I'm home, right? Mm-hmm. I have a beast of a computer that I built. Granted, it's getting on in age, and I'm knocking on wood that it doesn't die on me, but I have a big, beefy PC to play games on when I'm at home, so I don't really use my Switch, and my partner doesn't use the Switch either because we got them a gaming PC that they can play Stardew Valley on instead of my Switch. So really, it's only when I go on vacation that I use the Switch, and I thought this would actually be a perfect game series to have that I could jump in, you know, if I go on a trip in a couple months and I'm going to be on a plane for a few hours, if I just want to bring something with me on a long car ride, that type of thing. And I'm going to say right at the front, I do think this is the perfect game series for me to do that. Something that I can play, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours on, and then the next time I go on a flight in a few months, I can pull it back out, know exactly right where I was, pick that game back up, and go from there. Chase, I know you love your visual novels, so maybe you need to let me know what kind of experience you have with Phoenix Wright.
Oh, I mean, I've played the entire trilogy that you're describing on the Switch. I don't think I talked about it on the podcast. I did talk about the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, I believe. And if I didn't, then I need to go do that later as well. So I'm familiar with those. I know the Apollo Justice trilogy came out recently, and I am looking for the opportunity to bring that into my world. Because I love these kinds of games, right? They're classic kind of mystery games that put you in the center of a court drama, right? Wow, I haven't talked about any of these in the podcast. Okay, cool. So this will be fun then. These are all new takes to everyone listening. But yeah, I never played them originally, right? I didn't play them on the DS or the 3DS because I didn't have that game. But I sure did have the Switch and the ability to go through here and have a wonderful time with it. I love this kind of gameplay, this kind of hybrid of visual novel and puzzle games. And I've loved the twist that it has inspired with stuff like Murder by Numbers, which is essentially just Phoenix Wright, but with some Picross instead of pure logic puzzles. So yeah, I'm all in here on the kind of split between going around a crime scene, finding clues, talking to people to build up the evidence that you will then take into a trial, and then going in day by day. Over the course of, I think trials have to be solved in 3 days because the Japanese court system is cool and good. And this game is definitely not directly satirizing the nightmare that it ultimately brings to the table. It's a really fascinating sequence of games, high stakes, very fun.
I knew you were going to like this. I knew this was going to be a pleasant surprise for you. I did also enjoy the puzzle game and visual novel aspect of it. Although I will say I am not sure that I like the particular genre or some of like the tropes. And given I played the first game, I'm not sure how old that it's from 2001 in Japan, wasn't released in the US until 2005. So it does feel slightly dated, if I'm going to be honest. And here's the thing, right? I'm jumping the shark really early here. I don't think I would play this at home. Right? I don't think I would just like be sitting here at home and being like, you know what I really want to play? Phoenix Wright, right? And that's a me thing, right? But, like I said, this feels like a great game to just have in my Switch ready to go when I'm on a flight, when I'm on a long bus ride, when I'm on something where I don't have to be worried about, like, okay, I haven't played this game in 3 months, now I need to relearn the controls, like I've had with some, you know, single-player experiences. I'm going to go into this. Maybe I'm in the middle of a case that I forgot about. I might have to restart the case, or maybe I'll, you know, kind of pick it up as I go. But there's nothing complicated about it, right? And the story feels straightforward enough that putting space and time in between it, my brain is going to be able to pick back up and be like, oh yeah, this is what was going on. This is where I was. So like anything that I say where I'm just like, I'm not 100% sold on it, it's not that I'm not 100% sold on the concept, right? Or on the gameplay or the game itself or the plot. It's more of, this is going to fit a very specific niche for me as a gamer, and not be something I'm going to traditionally play every single day or every other day.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly getting in, like, this is the first of the series, right? So it's definitely the rawest the gameplay will ever be. I would be very curious, just so I know where you're at and can alter my discussion of this stuff accordingly. What case did you get to? How far in did you actually get?
I got through episode 3, so I got through the Steel Samurai.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, because that's, I think that gives you a good idea, right? Like the first turnabout, that's your tutorial, right? It gives you a basic understanding of how these things work. You get your, you know, Larry Butts, right? Your great pun names start here. And you obviously get Turnabout Sisters, which is the first example of one that's very story driven, right? You're getting into Maya Faye very specifically. Mia, your mentor, of course, has to go down because Phoenix has to step up and become the, the strong lawyer in his own right. And Turnabout Samurai is the series' first, like, it's a cool case, you know? We're having fun here. There may be a couple mild things that you learn from an overall narrative perspective, but ultimately it's, like a classic case of the week, Law and Order style thing, right? Where, you know, Jackhammer Will Powers, they're not necessarily going to have their story told over a bunch of different missions beyond that, though you may see a couple recurring characters therein. But it is a good kind of starting point, if you will, for kind of how that breaks down. I guess let's start here. You said that you don't think this is a genre you would necessarily play if you weren't like flying or whatnot. What are the things that you like about the gameplay loop, for lack of a better phrase? And what are the frustrations you ran into? Because some of this is just, it's the first time they're doing this, and the series does make improvements over time.
So let's start with the negatives first, right? Because I think it's easy to kind of like nitpick first and then be like, well, here's what I really enjoyed that made me push through those nitpicks. I find it excruciatingly repetitive. It is super, super repetitive, the amount of times you have to go back to a scene to just get like one more little piece of information that then sends you back to another scene that gets you one more piece of information that then sends you back to another scene that gets you a clue that you then get to use in the trial later on. Mm-hmm. I do think how it handles your travel is also, again, a bit repetitive, that you can't just go from like your law office to, for using the case of the Turnabout Samurai, to the second studio, outside, right? It's, you have to go from there to the gate, through the gate into the path, mm-hmm. then from the path to Studio 2, right? And I'm going to guess that that is something that they kind of will get some complaints about and fix later on in the series. Mm-hmm. But there is just like a very repetitiveness to some of the actions that makes me yearn for a much more modern game, right? Like I said, this game came out in the United States in 2005, and it's the first of a series that I'm sure has a lot of tweaking and improvements to it. And it's not something that like makes me not want to play anymore, right? It absolutely doesn't, because I do understand it's the first of the series. It's an older game. They had limited functionality. Like, to me, I go, I am on a Switch. I should be able to press on the screen where I would like to go and go there. Instead of using, you know, a list, they basically have to go, you know, kind of like a dialogue tree almost to get you to where you want to go. Other things is, I do find sometimes the game is not very clear about what piece of information you're supposed to be using for an objection, or when you're supposed to be, but like not accusing them of lying, but like digging more, like pressing them on what they're saying. Versus using something to actively, you know, create an objection. And sometimes the like piece of information that you're looking for is difficult to find, right? And not difficult in a like fun way of like, well, you just have to like, you know, angle the screen the right way to see that little glimmer. It again is going back through this like almost dialogue tree of just like, what is the one right response here? Again, I can tell it's an early game, right? I can tell it's something that needs to be and could absolutely be refined later on. But again, I'm picking nits at this point. the things that I do like is I do like the simplicity of the gameplay loop, right? Just because sometimes it's frustrating not to know exactly what you're looking for, it is easy, right, to collect the information, right? It is easy to go through the dialogue trees. It doesn't give you 1,000 different options. It's kind of like, okay, this, here's your information. And there is some fun to figuring out the puzzle of what piece goes where and what accusation works best. I never felt like too punished for getting anything wrong. It did seem like I made a mistake, right? When I chose something wrong, after the fact, I'm like, oh, I'm big dumb. I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And then when I chose the right thing, I said, me so smart, me good attorney. Mm-hmm. Which is fun. Like, it can be endearing. I think the biggest part of what kept me playing was the characters, right? Was the characterization. And that, from everything I've read, that's the sticking point for this game, right? If you don't like the characters you are interacting with, you're never going to like this game. If you don't like Phoenix, fuck off. Like, he's the title character. If you don't like the interactions him and Edgeworth have, like, yeah, fuck off. That's what this game is about, right? There was, like, some review that was, this is a gay love story masquerading as a game about crime and legality. And honestly, I'm here for it. That's a Steam, you know, review. Like, oh, yeah, that's funny. I don't necessarily know if it's a love story, but that's, like, a funny way to interpret it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like...
You haven't gotten to the love story bit of it yet. You'll get there, assuming you keep playing, which is the thing that I hope happens.
So I do know, spoiler, that at some point Edgeworth is accused of a crime, and then Phoenix has to defend him.
That may be the very next thing you are about to do, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Like, I do know that happens. And again, this harkens me to remembering watching, there was an anime that I think it was called, like, Cold Case or something, that was on Toonami at, like, 5:30 in the morning when we lived in Colorado. So we'd be watching Adult Swim before we go to school. And it's, like, this bloody murder detective noir anime. And, like, this kind of reminded me of that, but, like, way more flamboyant, way more just, like, ah, let's have fun. Mm-hmm. This is cute, right? Entertaining instead of, like, bloody, gory, gutsy stuff. So, that's what stood out to me, right? The nitpicks that I had could not overcome the joyfulness of the character, so to speak.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I have to say that phrasing does not fill me with optimism about your desire to move forward with this specific game, which I do understand, right? Like, I think some of the stuff you talk about, like needing to go location to location one step at a time, can certainly be frustrating. It would be a lot more palatable if you had the ability to pick and choose your location from a drop-down menu, which eventually they do get to, right? Eventually the game does a better job of that. But I think in these early games in particular, they want you to go step by step, because there's some stuff that only gets triggered when you run into a location that you may not naturally know you need to go to, right? Turnabout Samurai has one where you have to go back to the front gate at one point. And if the game didn't force you to exit through the front gate, you might never know that something's going to happen at the front gate that will give you new information, right? So there's a reason that it exists the way it does, but it is inherently frustrating, and you're far from the only person to have that particular criticism, right? But there definitely is the heart of the original game, and the reason I think a lot of people do still recommend people start there. As you said, it's the characters, right? It's a universe that is formed with this kind of, case of the week identity that every now and then has these larger implications that keep everything feeling satisfying and like it is all part of one singular world. And I certainly am, I guess the question is, are you enjoying those bits enough to get past the niggles that you're having, or do you think that to fully enjoy something like this, you would need to go maybe a little bit further ahead in the series where some of the stuff has been ironed out a bit?
So this is a tricky answer to me, right? Because I would, like, if this was something that I was going to play more regularly, right? I definitely would be like, yeah, I'm gonna skip ahead. I'm gonna skip the rest of this game and move on to the next game to see if they clean up some of these nits that are bothering me.
Mm.
But again, because of the way I am going to play this game, is this is now a game that's just going to be on my Switch.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time I go on a trip and I am like, oh, I want to play a game while I'm on this flight or this bus or this train or whatever, I'm just going to open this up and pick up where I left off, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that the nits don't bother me. It's that I am not trying to play this game from here on out or this series from here on out to try and beat it quickly, right? This is something that is going to be with me for a while and something that I'm just going to kind of plug away here and there when I'm in a situation where I don't have my gaming computer or I'm, you know, I need to just kill a little bit of time. I had thought about like bringing it to work and playing it on my lunch, but the reality is I have so many fucking TV shows that I haven't watched that are on my list to watch. I wouldn't actually play this, right? I would open up a TV show and I would instead watch that to get that thing off the list instead of playing this game and you know, bringing my Switch to work. So I think it's a very hard question for me to answer directly because of how I'm going to interact with this game moving forward. But like, I think there's some value, right? I think there's some value in at least giving the first of a thing a shot and seeing how much does it do it for you, right? Spider-Man 1, right? First Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Great example of like, okay, well, if you don't vibe with the characters, right? You don't vibe with Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, you're not going to want to play any of the other games, right? Or any of the other movies. You're not going to want to watch any of the other movies, right? It's something that I think The Amazing Spider-Man had a problem with, is that those characters just weren't compelling enough for me to put up with, you know, the story, right? Or put up with anything else, even though I super love Spider-Man. And again, I think at the end of the day, like, Phoenix Wright is about the characters and the plot and the narrative and the storytelling way more than it has anything to do with the gameplay.
That's fair. I struggle here because obviously I love these games. And I'm the one who plays I'm the kind of person who played these games, and I just didn't stop playing them until I was done with the full series, right? I did that with this trilogy that you're talking about here, though obviously you only played the first three cases of the first one. And I did it with the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, which I would argue one of the more incredible, kind of combinations of games that I've ever played. I love The Great Ace Attorney. I think the setting it back 100 years time-wise goes a really long way towards explaining why cases don't involve certain like modern elements that you would otherwise expect. And I absolutely love the characters that are added and how much everything links together. I think maybe the tutorial bits are a little bit long, but once you get past that, it allows the second game to shine in a way that's really, really exciting. But from everything you've told me here, I'm not sure that there's any version of this formula that you would be actively trying to, like, sit down and play all the way through from start to finish, because it just kind of sounds like not that style of game for you. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a great comparison for this, right? Kind of like a tropey thing, is this is the paperback novel that the mom in like any fucking any series on like ABC or whatever, right, has in their beach bag that they bring with them to the beach, and they're sitting under an umbrella, like reading this paperback novel that they've only read like 30 pages in, because their kids are like constantly causing problems, and all the mom wants is like 20 minutes to read their fucking book, right? That's what this is going to be for me, right? It is going to be always there in a very specific scenario that I can pull up. I can be like, yep, I'm gonna keep working away at this and enjoy my time with it. But then, yeah, when I get home and I can play
fucking Call of Duty or League or Smite or whatever single player game that I'm in the middle of, you know, Assassin's Creed game or something, right? It's never ever going to compete with that because of who I am as a gamer, right? And because of what I am looking for out of my gaming experience. But if I have the option of playing Phoenix Wright or watching a movie or reading a book while I'm on a plane, like, this is always a good option for me. And it's not something that if I pick it up, I'm going to be like, okay, now what the fuck was I doing? Like, I already know what I'm doing, right? I already know what's next. I don't need to, you know, read a guide to be like, oh yeah, this is what I was doing. It's always going to be there as something that I can engage with on my own terms. And I think some of that just comes down to, like, I'm not the biggest visual novel person on the planet. That's not my, like, my gaming genre. But it is nice to, like, have something to play and take up some time while you're, you know, stuck on a plane. I feel like I'm really underselling this game, which is
you're not selling it, but that's fine. I'll sell it. If you like visual novels or detective games or both of those things, the series is great. I do recommend The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles over the original trilogy. Perhaps I will do an episode at some point talking about why, because I love those games and played them a while back, and perhaps would have brushed myself back up had I realized that was the direction we were going. Could have had a theme here, but at the end of the day, I just think it's a genre that needs a game like the Ace Attorney series, right? You know, we love inherently detective stories. That's something that have always existed. It's something that has always kind of latched on to people. And having one that has, you know, the courtroom drama aesthetic, the over-the-top characters, doesn't take itself too seriously, has enough interesting elements over the course of a case to keep you engaged. And look, it's not like every case is good. Turnabout Big Top is in the second game, and oh boy, can I not wait for you to get there, if you ever get there, because that case is an experience. But at the end of the day, it's really good at what it's trying to be. And if you like detective stories, if you like crime dramas, if you like visual novels, if you like puzzle games, this does all of those things. And I have yet to find a series that does it as well as the Ace Attorney series does. And it just happens that it's just not your genre. So yeah, you're not going to be the advocate on this one, and that's okay.
And I do feel like some of that is like what my intention with this game was from the start, right? I knew once I got off the plane here in Rochester, I wasn't going to be immediately picking my Switch back up the next day to keep playing more of it. And I think that was what some of the appeal was to me of getting this game and it being episodic and having some length to it, right? And having like multiple games in this trilogy. And I did also get the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles. It was in a bundle. I bought the bundle on the Switch, again, with this intention of like, yeah, this is something for me to like chip away at and work away in these very specific settings. And just because I'm not selling the game well doesn't mean I don't recommend it. I think it's a really good game, right? And I think, like Chase said, people that are really into visual novels and detective games and you know, the kind of like point-and-click puzzle games, I think you will enjoy it. And I would take Chase's advice and maybe play the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles instead, or maybe play the second or third game of the trilogy if you are really worried about some of the like doubling back and some of the, you know, less user-friendly aspects of the first
game. I have some bad news about the second and third games of the collection that you're in. But hey.
Got it.
The differences are marginal. It gets better. It's just not... I think Great Ace Attorney Chronicles takes a big step. And I'll be curious about the Apollo Justice trilogy, which just got remastered and put out earlier this year, which I have not played and I don't know a ton about, but I'm very excited for it. And so that'll probably be one of my next bits. That's one of the I think that package has the 2D to 3D transition that the game has, because it's 3D models in Great Ace Attorney Chronicles and most of the later games in the series. So, but yeah, look, I'm glad that you played it. I'm glad that you were able to appreciate it, even if it didn't end up winning you over to the point that you want to jump right into continuing it. And all I ask is that whenever that next trip happens, now that I know that you've played it, keep me up to date on your thoughts on each case, man. I love with these kind of detective games, the same way that I did with Eduardo with Danganronpa, just going, getting a play-by-play of your experience with this kind of game is a blast. So I'd love to hear your thoughts as you dig forward, especially the next case you have, which is known as one of the best in the series.
Interesting. Okay. I will certainly have to keep that in mind. And, you know, I did enjoy it. I just have a very specific way that I am going to enjoy the series. But that being said, Chase, you played not just one, but two games for this episode, including one that I have already played. So what have you played this week?
Yeah, so I wanted to do two games for this because the first one's one that has been out for a long time, and there's just not a ton to say. Donut County. Donut County is great. I had a good time with it. And I wish I had more I wanted to add, but I guess let's get into the baseline, right? You play, I guess theoretically you're playing as the raccoon in this, though you're kind of getting it from a third person perspective. You have a donut delivery company that actually delivers giant holes that suck up everything in their wake and get bigger and bigger the more objects that they swallow. All, of course, inspired by a Peter Molyneux quote, if you remember that parody account from back in the early 2010s. It was just kind of a game jam given, brought to life and given a little bit more heart and flexibility to it. It's a very satisfying game, right? You know, sucking up individual bits in order to make the hole bigger and bigger so you can swallow bigger things so that you can then take on other challenges. You'll get some puzzles every now and then, especially around liquids and needing to empty the hole so that you can bring more things in. It's never particularly difficult, but it does give you a lot of opportunities to engage with a very silly world in a very silly plot. And any game that allows you to text people back with a duck emoji 100 different times in order to get an achievement is doing something right.
It certainly is. And I remember playing this game relatively recently to it coming out. The funny thing is, I think I played this on a flight from Vegas to New York back when we worked at the same company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the few times like I had used my Switch at that point as well. I guess like what initially drew you to this game? Why did you want to spend some time with it?
Yeah, I mean, I originally wanted to check it out because I've seen some Let's Plays of it, right? And I was just looking for something that would be like a nice cathartic afternoon, right? I'm sure I got it in a key from, you know, one of the various, you know, Twitch monthly things or whatnot. And I, you know, said to myself, I would love to, you know, just take an afternoon and explore it, right? And I did it in one sitting. It was a single play session, and it was nice. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. It was very cathartic, right? Just a very therapeutic move things under hole, make hole bigger, laugh around at all the different levels and things. I beat the boss in one attempt without taking any damage, which is apparently a thing not a lot of people do. But I had a great time with that. It did all the things I needed it to do, you know? And from that experience, I appreciated the Katamari Damacy of it all. You know, Katamari Damacy, for those of you who haven't played it, is a game in which you are constantly picking up different objects. You get bigger and bigger over time, and can absorb more and more things until at one point you're literally collecting planets in this giant ball that you've put together. And this is kind of the opposite of that, right? It's slowly but surely making a bigger and bigger hole as more and more stuff gets sucked in and going into the Trashpedia, as they call it, to get a raccoon's perspective of all of these different elements. It's just fun. It's just fun. It's not particularly deep. There isn't any like grand story that is going to change your life at the end of the day. But it does everything it needs to do, and I appreciate it for that.
Yeah, it is very simplistic in what it's trying to do, right? It is, you are whole, put things in whole, make whole bigger. And there is some, like, cleverness to it, right? There is some puzzle aspect to it. I particularly, like, remember kind of, like, some of the water puzzles that you have to do and figure out how to manipulate the water to, you know, beat the level. And it is a very cute, easy, mechanical game that kind of makes you think sometimes about, like, personal responsibility and, you know, what your actions do to the others around you, because, like, you suck your neighbors and, like, your friends and stuff down into this hole as well, because they just happen to live in the house that you just swallowed, right? It's, there is some, like, interesting philosophy to it. If you like sit and think and realize, like, maybe the game about a hole that swallows everything has some more nuance to it than it's just a game about a hole that swallows everything. There is some like Roald Dahl philosophy concepts to it that I do find kind of fascinating. But yeah, it's not a very long game. It's not very difficult. The fact you can play it in you know, an afternoon is, I would like to say it's a feature, not a bug, but there are quite a few people that disagree and go, like, you know, hey, for $13-$14 retail price, it seems like maybe I should get a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does everything it needs to do at the end of the day. I don't ask for more of it than it's willing to give, because I don't think it needs to be. I you know, right now it's 70% off as we're doing this. I don't know that sale will still be going on, but even at its base price, like, sometimes we just need an afternoon to relax, right? To take in things for what they are and have a nice time. And Donut County is a game you can pour yourself a nice cup of tea. You can sit down in a nice relaxing chair and just have a nice evening. And that's enough. I don't think it needs to be more than it is. But because I like it for that, I didn't feel like it was fair to do a full episode on it, if only because we'd already be done.
That is fair.
While the free agency talk one may be a little bit longer, I still want to give a little bit more to the listeners at home. So, can I sell you on a game called Rhythm Doctor?
Are you going to do a better job selling it than I did selling Phoenix Wright?
I mean, honestly, I just hope I do a better job selling this than I sold Bellatro, which I still breaks my heart that I whiffed as badly as I did. That's going to keep me up
you
at night.
Whiff it. You didn't whiff
it. I fucking love that game, and it completely bounced off of you, and I feel like I failed as a human being. But we'll move on for the sake of the way that this whole setup works. Rhythm Doctor is really good, man. Rhythm Doctor is, as you can guess, a rhythm-based game. And most interestingly, it is a one-button game. You do not, you know, this is not like a DDR, right, where you have like the four directionals. Or even like a Guitar Hero, right, where you have the five different buttons. There is one button, and you have to hit it in rhythm, sometimes with two or three different characters, with two or three different rhythms going on, and you're trying to keep track of it all and hit that one button perfectly timed as best you can. It's set, as you can imagine from the game, in a hospital where everyone is overworked and understaffed. And so you are part of this like virtual doctor program that they've come up with. This idea that you can kind of come in and fill in the holes that our cast of characters are unable to deal with, and do so by playing these rhythm games to make that, to make sure that they're okay. It starts simple enough. You know, the initial levels are all, you have to hit the button at the seventh beat, whatever the tempo of the song is, you're trying to hit it on seven. And you're kind of just trying to adjust to the different tempos that occur over the course of the song. But as you move forward, you'll get different tempos that you need to hit. You'll get notes that need to be held. You'll get phantom notes that you have to adjust to. You can't just measure out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And you'll have the occasional boss battle, which loves to fuck with you. One time, there's a one in particular I love where it kind of minimizes your game screen and will bounce around your actual desktop, doing various different, like, you know, dubstep-y effects. Definitely something you'll need to pay attention to if you're someone that's susceptible to epilepsy or, you know, motion sickness or whatnot. I think there are accessibility settings to make that more manageable for people who struggle with that kind of thing. But the chaos of it all was an absolute blast to navigate as someone who doesn't have any issues with that side of things. And yeah, it's just really, really good as a rhythm game.
So it's kind of interesting, right? Looking at the trailer here on Steam as it comes up, it gives me some fucking like WarioWare vibes. But the philosophy of it being a one-button game, on understanding like rhythm games, right, is that simplification, does it make it easier, or is there like a subtle difficulty to it with the fact that it's only one button?
You know, my answer to that will be, as someone who I know watches RT Game, go check out his playthrough sometime. It does not make it easier. It just, I mean, it means it makes it more accessible, right? I know people who like have you know, disabilities that can make it difficult to engage with games for extended periods of time, for whom a single button game is a lot easier to manage. It's one of the things that I think it has gotten praise for in the past, if you look at the Steam reviews. But there are so many different variations that come up over time, and because it is just one button, the game can be tough in terms of like how much wiggle room you are given. Not to mention that every level has a night version of the level in which things get tougher. So for example, you might have a level in which you're trying to deal with two patients, and the doctor might say, hey, I'll take the top one, you take the bottom one. And they each have their own different beats, their own different rhythms going on. That might overlap sometimes and not overlap at other times. And then you play the night level and it's just you. And so you're having to try to keep pace of two different beats at the same time. And they're not always coded the same way. So you might have something where someone has a like a do, 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 do. And there's a syncopation you have to keep into account. And then someone who's like da, 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 right? And you're having to hit it on exactly the right beat there, and when both of them are happening simultaneously, have fun keeping them all straight, especially because failing any one of those meters is enough to probably prevent you from getting the score that you need to unlock whatever that next level is. You don't need to get a perfect A rank on everything. You know, the game doesn't demand that of you, though it certainly has achievements for people who do so. You know, I am a rhythm guy. I am a rhythm gamer. I play a lot of games of this style. I have yet to get a full S rank on any of them. And maybe if I went back to the very first levels, I'd get closer. But I have been playing for A ranks. I've been playing to do well enough to unlock the night levels and feel like I did my part. But perfect? Ooh, boy. There's definitely a lot more challenge than you may initially expect from something that is ultimately one button. They make the most out of that button and make you really earn it.
Yeah, this looks fucking wild. I will say, doesn't feel like my jam, right? Doesn't seem like it's my cup of tea. But just looking at this, this looks cool. You saying, like, having to take care of two different patients, do you have a way to go back and forth from their bars? Or is it you're just hitting space on, like...
It's all so simultaneous.
You have a rhythm.
It's all okay. Simultaneous. There, you can see if you look at the Steam page, there's one where there's a guy, a girl, and a bird. And the X's represent like the silent beats. So you have to take that into account. But that blue bar there that you can see kind of highlighted over everything, that you have to hit the button whenever any of those three hit that mark. They're all happening at the same time. And they're all slightly different from each other. And so trying to keep track of all of that is tough. But, you know, I will say something that I do appreciate is that it does have a real story to it. You know, it's not something that's particularly intrusive, but, you know, they are each characters. They each have their own stories to them. You get the songwriter who has a crush on the girl at the cafe, and he drinks coffee every time that he's struggling to come up with an idea. And that is causing some heart issues. But having those heart issues means he ends up at the hospital the same time that she does. And, you know, you watch him like badly navigate flirting because he's just not like in a place to be able to be open with his emotions on things. He struggles with that. But you also like you get the person working at the coffee shop. You get her perspective too, right? And her level's all about being overworked and things get busy constantly. And you're just trying to keep up with this ever increasing level of customers, right? And the stress is where her heart issues are coming from. The birds and things are always kind of fascinating because they just kind of hang out and each have their own rhythms. They can be part of kind of a sillier angle. But then you also have the politician who threatens your funding if you don't make him a heavy priority. So how do you handle that, right? He has a much lower tolerance for you screwing up than the other people. But you're just trying to balance the needs of everybody, knowing that your success in this will make or break the resources that this hospital desperately needs to take care of everyone. And if an overworked and underpaid medical system, employees of various different positions in positions of service and labor in our society, doing their best to balance these things, often at the cost of their own health due to the demands that are being put upon them, resonates with you in any way, shape, or form, I think you'll find a lot of heart in this story that will continue to push you forward.
Interesting. I do like the concept, right, of like, oh, that, you know, you're utilizing rhythm to keep people alive. Like that's a pretty fascinating concept, and it's nice that they can build some personality and some characterization, you know, inside what is essentially using one button in a rhythm context. Like that, if you approached me and said, our game uses one button and the gameplay is you press that one button in time to a beat, I would expect there to be a lot more time and energy spent than in telling somewhat of a good story in the background. So, I mean, it sounds fascinating. I just know I would play this for 10 minutes, get frustrated, and just, like, move on. So, personally, for me... You sold this much better than Blotro.
Man,
unfortunately, the gameplay is not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, I apologize to all of my fellow Blotro players for my performance last week. I will learn. I will do better. But look, Rhythm Doctors.
You'll be better tomorrow?
I'll be better tomorrow. I missed that button. I lost it recently, and it genuinely made me upset. I'm very bummed about it. I may message the guys to see if they have a spare one. It's been a genuine heartbreaker. But putting my autistic need to hold onto a button for the sake of my sanity to the side for a moment, I recommend Rhythm Doctor. If you are someone who likes rhythm games, if you're someone who appreciates that kind of musical styling, you know, the work is great. There's a lot of heart to it. The developers have put in a lot of work. My only thing that's a little bit frustrating is that I don't actually know when they plan on releasing the game fully. It's currently in early access, and I'll be honest with you, it feels like a little bit of a cop-out because it's been in early access since 2021. And they've added a lot since then, right? They just released their fifth act, and I haven't even played that one yet. And I'm super excited to give it a shot. And it's great as it is, right? And as a robust level editor, so there's endless replayability if you want to go into the community and find people's best levels that they put together. But I do inherently struggle with games that are comfortable being in early access forever, right? Like, early access there should be a clear purpose behind it, right? And at some point you need to allow yourself to move on to the next project, and being in development forever I think is not something I want to support. But at the end of the day, I love Rhythm Doctor. I think it's great as it is. I think if you buy it today, you'll get a full experience that's worth your time. I think especially with the level editor, you're going to get a lot there. I wish I had a better sense of what this roadmap ultimately looks like, because I just don't know what their eventual plan is. I don't know how much they have scope for it. I don't know when it ultimately will feel like enough. I just know that what I've enjoyed quite a bit. It's definitely worth your time. And go give it some love if you like rhythm games. But hopefully you'll give this podcast some love on your favorite podcasting app. You know, we don't usually ask for like reviews or things because that's not really something we lose sleep over, but we do love hearing your thoughts when you reach out to, I don't know, me at chasewassener.bsky.social or the podcast, Rough Drafts Podcast at bsky.social. Love hearing about the games that we've talked about. Are you like me, more on the Ace Attorney hype train? Are you like Walter, maybe not someone that bounces off these particular genres? Let us know what you think and what's been clicking with you. Walter, where can the nice people at home find you?
Yeah, as always, you guys can find me on Twitter at CADs_LOL. The podcast is also there at Rough Drafts Pod. You can also follow me on BSky at CADs.BSky.social. And as always, please listen to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform of choice, whether it is on the independent Steam Cleaners and Final Cut feeds or on the combined Rough Drafts podcast feed.
Absolutely, positively. Definitely go check all of that out and come back. 1 week we'll be doing our next Final Cut episode. If you like movies, you should stick around for that. But if you're just here for the gaming stuff, come back in 2 weeks. We'll have more for you then. Completely different games from anything we've talked about in the past. And until then, goodbye, Internet.